You may have become aware that in your order of service, poems are there for you to follow along, as well as some of the lyrics to the wonderful music we're hearing. Our first reading this morning is entitled "Do Not Be Ashamed" by Wendell Berry. You will be walking some night in the comfortable dark of your yard, and suddenly a great light will shine round about you, and behind you will be a wall you never saw before. It will be clear to you suddenly that you were about to escape and that you are guilty. You misread the complex instructions. You are not a member. You lost your card or never had one. And you will know that they have been there all along, their eyes on your letters and books, their hands in your pockets, their ears wired to your bed. Though you have done nothing shameful, they will want you to be ashamed. They will want you to kneel and weep and say you should have been like them. And once you say you are ashamed, reading the page they hold out to you, then such light as you have made in your history will leave you. They will no longer need to pursue you. You will pursue them, begging forgiveness. They will not forgive you. There is no power against them. It is only candor that is aloof from them, only an inward clarity, unashamed, that they cannot reach. Be ready. When their light has picked you out and their questions are asked, say to them, "I am not ashamed." A sure horizon will come around you. The heron will begin his evening flight from the hilltop.
If I had one wish, if a magic genie appeared and said I could have one wish, I would wish that all the shame could be wiped out in all the humans everywhere on earth. Now, I'm not talking about guilt. I think there is too much guilt, but I'm not talking about guilt, and I'm not talking about conscience, that when we know we've done something wrong and we feel bad about it, and our behavior is bad and we're aware of it. Guilt is about something that you have done, and shame is about something that you are. It's a deep sense of unworthiness. All of us have some, and some of us have a lot. Shame is a deeply unconscious emotion that holds us back from being fully ourselves or pushes us into behaviors that can be hurtful to others. So that's a powerful poem that Scott just read. Perfect, perfect for a powerful emotion. Berry talks about that moment when you're infected by shame, that moment when shame is imposed upon you by that big light. Very dramatic setting, almost like a nightmare. In fact, I think I've had nightmares like that poem. You forgot the rules. You've been living your life and caught off guard. Are you a child? Are you an adult? And who are they? Right now, it's easy for us to plug in this feared authoritarian government as the they. It's not an unreasonable interpretation. But really, there are many theys. The shame and the oppression comes from people who have power over us, our parents, our spouses, relatives, our bosses. And the difficulty with shame, the difficulty in wiping it out is that it's self-perpetuating. Some people who hold a lot of shame go inward. This will see bulimia, cutting themselves, drug addiction. It's a self-affliction from internalized shame. And some people take their energy outward. Some people can't bear their shame or what happened to them so much that they inflict the same thing on someone else. Violence, abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse, People who are stuck in their shame, and they want you to be stuck in shame as well. They want to recruit you. Shame uses tools of intimidation and fear. You see this in racism and xenophobia. Internet trolls are the perfect example. People filled with shame who lash out and try to shame others from their anonymous place. Shame is passed on through physical, sexual, or emotional abuse, passed on through generations. Of course, as a child, you're the most vulnerable. You don't have the emotional development to stand up to those people that you're dependent on, whoever they are. When you're told you're stupid or you're bad, you internalize this. When you are beaten or sexually abused, you think that's because you're unworthy. And somehow, perhaps, you deserve it. Barry said that once you say you are ashamed, then such light that you have made in your history will leave you. Once you are infected by shame, the shame can overwhelm your ability to live your life fully. But of course, Barry tells us that it's never too late to stand up to shame, to declare your independence. He encourages us to do this. Say to them, I am not ashamed. A sure horizon will come around you. The heron will begin his evening flight from the hilltop. That horizon is your future. That heron is your freedom.
Please join me in the spirit of prayer and meditation. We have reserved this hour set aside from others in the week in order to catch our breath, to come together in community, and to reflect upon those things that have found their ways into our hearts. We have reserved these few minutes set aside from others in this hour in order to acknowledge and appreciate the interdependent and inexplicable that connects and binds this community, and us to those we love, and us to all. We have reserved this time to acknowledge those beloved people and gifts in our lives, too often taken for granted, and voice our sincerest gratitude. We have also reserved this time to acknowledge our struggles and challenges, and the struggles and challenges of those we love, and the struggles and challenges of those known to us only through that indefinable web of connection. We now pause and reflect upon those gifts and loved ones who fill our hearts, the beauty and love in our lives that give us joy, and those experiences that nourish and sustain us. For these, we are most thankful. We now lift our voices to name those gifts for which we are grateful. May our gratefulness create more generosity within us. We now pause and reflect upon those struggles and challenges that fill our hearts, for fear, grief, sickness, those difficulties affecting us, those we love, and our world. We now lift our voices to name these troubles and those affected by them. May our concern prompt more courage, more hope, and more healing. We have reserved this hour in community and come together to reflect upon and name these things, because we know there are those among us who have also faced these very human experiences. And we know that a joy shared is a joy multiplied, and a sorrow shared is a sorrow divided. And thus, our connections grow stronger. May we continue to grow in courage, gratitude, love, and caring. And now, we fall silent for a time to reflect upon all these things. I invite you to remain seated and turn to hymn number 1053, How Could Anyone? Our second reading this morning is Love After Love by Derek Walcott. The time will come when, with elation, you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's welcome and say, "Sit here, eat." You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine. Give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another, who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes. Peel your own image from the mirror. Sit, feast on your life.
Last month in our spiritual deepening circles, we did a vows exercise. Not unlike the exercise that I ask married couples to do before their marriage ceremony. It was something that I found from the poet Mark Nepo. And he asked us to think of your relationship with yourself like a marriage. And ask yourselves, what vow would you make to yourself or consider making to yourself? We also asked the circle participants to reflect on how well they thought they're achieving the goal of loving themselves no matter how others see them, or how well they were at accepting and embracing their faults and limitations. How many of you were part of a circle that reflected on those questions last month? And how was that for you? Hard? Hard. That's the feedback I got. Why is it so challenging to think about loving yourself? To think about having a loving relationship with yourself? To think about what kind of commitments you would make to yourself? The person you're going to spend your entire life with. Of course, we were taught not to be self-centered, not quite sure where you're supposed to center yourself if you're not centering yourself around yourself. Walcott, in his poem, gets right to the heart of the matter. He says, "The time will come when with elation you will greet yourself arriving at your own door in your own mirror, and each will smile at each other's welcome." That makes me smile with my whole body, makes me relax at the thought of that. Imagine coming home to yourself, the one who knows you best. When you hear that phrase of greeting yourself, who do you imagine greeting? Yourself as you are now? Maybe yourself as a child, or maybe your elder self? Buddhism understands the core is self-love and self-compassion. The loving-kindness meditation in Buddhism recommends that you start wishing loving-kindness with yourself, and preferably yourself as a young child. May I be filled with loving-kindness. You imagine saying that to yourself as a young child. The idea, of course, is that you can't love others if you're not able to love yourself. Walcott's poem asks us to reflect on ourselves as strangers to whom we need to reconnect. Give back your heart to yourself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you've ignored for another, who knows you by heart. I was imagining that Billy Joel song, "I Love You Just the Way You Are," standing in front of the mirror. "I love you just the way you are." Silly, but lovely. Lovely, lovely. Imagine getting all those judgments and criticisms out of your head and saying to yourself, "I love you just the way you are." Now, some of you may still be thinking that this sounds egotistical. Why? Why not love yourself as much as you love anyone else? Why not give yourself the care and consideration that you would give to anyone who is important to you? Loving yourself is the ground from which all other love and kindness can spring. Walcott chose the metaphor of food to embellish his poem. Feast on your life. Eat, give wine, give bread. How's that going for you? Are you feasting on your life? Are you connecting with yourself? This is the most important relationship of your life, the one with yourself. And it is never too late to start again, to give yourself to the stranger who knows you by heart.
Generosity is a spiritual practice. Your gifts, given in the spirit of generosity, support the life and work of our community, work that includes reaching out to others in their need. Every Sunday morning, we give half of our offering to an organization that the congregation has chosen to support, an organization working to heal the world. This month, we've chosen the organization many of us know if we've lived in town for long, the Children's Receiving Home of Sacramento. Almost 75 years in existence, they can house up to 98 children in their recently renovated campus. Their vision and mission is to provide comprehensive care to children, youth, and their families. Thanks for your generosity. The offering will now be given and received.
Life has taught me this, every day is new. But if anything is true, all that matters when we're through is how we love. Faced with what we lack, some things fall apart. But from the ashes, new dreams start. All that matters to the heart is how we love. How we love. From the smallest act of kindness, in a word, a smile, a touch. In spite of our mistakes, chances come again. If we lose or if we win, all that matters in the end is how we love. How we love, how we love. I will not forget your kindness when I needed it so much. Sometimes we forget, try to be so strong. In this world of right and wrong, all that matters when we're gone, all that mattered all along. All we have that carries on is how we love. May
the spirit of gratitude bless and multiply all that you have, all that we give, and all that we receive. I've lost part of my script. We lack authenticity when we present ourselves as someone that we're not. At various times in my life, I've struggled to be what others thought I should be. Growing up, I lived under my mother's mantra of, "What will the neighbors think?" Not having a lot of confidence in herself and having no other venue to express herself other than motherhood, she needed me, her only child, to present in whatever manner that would satisfy the mores of the times so that she would not be judged as a poor mother. In adolescence, however, I switched. I needed to present myself as whatever was the popular girl's definition of correctness. So I tamped down my love of mathematics. I stopped entering the science fair. And instead, I spent my time, inordinate amounts of time, trying to figure out what the latest trends were in fashion and makeup. As a young mother and wife, I found myself guiltily going off to full-time career when most suburban women were stay-at-home moms. And for a while, I managed to live in both worlds. I took half days off so I could take cupcakes to school. I'd go over to the Little League park and manage the snack bar. I was erroneously equating these to what made a good mother. But I suspect it's the rare person who doesn't go through stages like this. I also recognize that my issues were much less onerous than what a young trans girl goes through when the world still sees her as a boy, when she, unable to live as the girl she knows herself to be, can't do that. I just can't imagine the pain she must have. I date my move to authenticity to the period in my 30s when I finally felt good enough about myself that I didn't need to manipulate how I acted just to measure up to the standards that other people set. And this is authenticity. It's also, I think, when I finally became a grown-up. I admitted to myself that I did know what I was doing and that I could trust myself and my decisions. I could even fail at an endeavor and know that I was still a valuable human being. So I'm at the age now where I've begun to review my life, like many of you in my cohort. I'm creating a legacy document for my children, not a memoir, but an accounting of how I became the person that I am, how I recognized and adopted the values that eventually contributed to my authenticity. I look back on my life, and I'm thankful. I want to be authentic and confident in my worthiness. I've let go of who I ought to be, and I embrace who I am.
Our final reading this morning is Afternoon with Irish Cows by Billy Collins. There were a few dozen who occupied the field across the road from where we lived, stepping all day from tuft to tuft, their big heads down in the soft grass, though I would sometimes pass a window and look out to see the field suddenly empty, as if they had taken wing, flown off to another country. Then, later, I would open the blue front door, and again the field would be full of their munching, or they would be lying down on the black and white maps of their sides, facing in all directions, waiting for rain. How mysterious, how patient and dumbfounded they appear in the long quiet of the afternoon. But every once in a while, one of them would let out a sound so phenomenal that I would put down the paper or the knife I was cutting an apple with and walk across the road to the stone wall to see which one of them was being torched or pierced through the side with a long spear. Yes, it sounded like pain until I could see the noisy one, anchored there on all fours, her neck outstretched, her bellowing head laboring upward as she gave voice to the rising, full-bodied cry that began in the darkness of her belly and echoed up through her bowed ribs into her gaping mouth. Then I knew that she was only announcing the large, unadulterated cowness of herself. pouring out the ancient apologia of her kind to all the green fields and the gray clouds, to the limestone hills and the inlet of the blue bay, while she regarded my head and shoulders above the wall with one wild, shocking eye.
On my refrigerator at home, I have a list of the top 10 things that people say on their deathbed, put together by a hospice nurse, one who served in that capacity for many years. The number one thing people say on their deathbeds: I wish I had had the courage to live a life true to myself and not what others expected of me. Why is that so hard? It is. Why is that so hard to live a life true to ourselves? So let's talk about that cow. The large, unadulterated cowness of it. Cowness shows up on Word as a misspelling. It wants to correct the spelling of cowness. But we know what cowness means. In his poem, Billy Collins uses the word apologia. It's related to the word apology. But in this case, it's more of a defense of one's opinions or conduct. That's what the dictionary says. An apologia is defense of one's opinion or conduct. The cow is making a statement of apologia of her kind, a case for her right to exist fully and completely as she is. Collins tells us this is a statement of being anchored there on all fours. You did such a great job with that. Her neck outstretched, her bellowing head laboring upward as she gave voice to the full-bodied cry that began in the darkness of her belly and echoed up through her bowed ribs, through her gaping mouth. I am me. This is my cowness. And she sure is. You know, cow is often used as a term to insult fat people, particularly women. What a fat cow. You've heard that. I'm sure you've heard it. So here's this cow, large, probably smelly, hairy. Some people don't like that. Some people find that offensive. And this cow, probably most cows, loud. I am cow, she bellowed. And bellowed so loud that Collins came from across the street to see what was going on, and she looked at him with one wild and shocking eye. I love that cow. I love her simplicity, her intention, her clarity. Her eye is shocking because nothing is held back. The light of her cowness blazes through. There's no shame in that cow. Now, of course, humans are not cows. Our lives are not as simple as that of a cow. But finding your own inner authority and bringing forth your own voice is not just for cows. Feasting on your life is not just for cows. We can have our life and feast on it too. We can confront our internalized shame and live fully and completely into our true selves. And for those of you who still are worried that this would be egotistical, do this because the world needs it from you. Howard Thurman said, "Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and do it. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive." So I say to you, let out your inner cow. I am here. I am me. I am not ashamed. I am worthy. Blessed be.